Hello and welcome to the Euractiv Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foot.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News Team.
So, Natasha.
So, Gerardo.
What a week. No, I'm joking. We're actually rushing in recording this podcast because Tash has a flight to take.
Don't say that. I'm dedicated to the podcast. I'm not rushing it anywhere. This is the same quality as you're always going to get.
I mean, you're a public personality now. So not only it's important that you share your agenda publicly,
oh my God.
But expect that our listeners want to know where you spend your weekends. No. So where are you flying?
I'm trying to keep a bit of mystery, actually. Like, ooh, where could she be going?
Okay, we can give a hint. It's a place that I visited last week because you're always following my footsteps.
Hey.
You are in my footsteps. No, we can say anything more for your privacy.
Yeah, for my safety. Yeah.
For your safety? Yeah, indeed. talking about what happened this week, there was a very important meeting in the, I mean, not very important, but very interesting, let's say, in the Agriculture Committee of the European Parliament.
It was, indeed. Yeah, actually, it touched upon all kinds of interesting issues, which we will get to, most of them, throughout this podcast. Yeah. But let's start.
Boring.
Boring.
No, enjoy.
Let's start with the updates. We had a little update from the Commission on the national strategic plans.
And what an update.
And what an update it was. Is it worth going a quick overview of what national strategic plans are again, do you think? Or does everyone know by now?
If you want to.
These are the national strategic plans, which are part of the Common Agricultural Policy reform. And through these plans, EU countries basically detail how they will meet the 9 EU-wide objectives of the CAP reform. So, you know, kind of the ball's more in member states' courts. They get to decide more what suits their particular situation in their particular countries. But it has not been very smooth sailing so far because these plans were due at the end of last year. Only a third of countries managed it. We've had a few laggards have managed to get their plans in since, but we're still missing 5 countries, but actually 6 plans because Belgium being Belgium.
Because Belgium.
Yeah. Has to be awkward and has 2 plans. So anyway, that's a very
remember
quick...
Remember that we lived there, right? So be
yeah,
careful.
Yeah. But that gives us the license to say things like that, you know, because we know it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There are also positive aspects of Belgium.
Of course. Otherwise...
Like, for instance, the food is not bad. I'm Italian. I can evaluate.
It's a big statement from you.
I'm not comparing to the Italian cuisine, but Belgian food is okay.
Anyway, that was a quick whistle stop tour of what
I'm a bit, take everything personal and I tend to share our personal lives.
We haven't noticed.
Yeah. Mine and your personal life.
Yeah.
Particularly your.
Clearly.
So what about these strategic plans? I mean, why they delaying the sending of the you know submitting these plans?
There's different reasons why different countries are submitting. There's different problems in different places, between you know elections in some places and change in government.
In Germany,
I'm thinking specifically of Germany there. Also, you know, some of the like CAP legislation. Like some of the final parts that were required came a bit late and some countries struggle with that. There's kind of various issues. And it's also the first time that EU countries are putting together these plans. So I suppose naturally there's some road bumps and some things to sort out in getting the kind of drafts together to submit for the Commission. Who then basically approve these plans. There's a whole process. They're going to evaluate these plans from the second that they receive a plan. They have 3 months to evaluate it and give their kind of first thoughts, send an observation letter, tell them what they thought, what they should change, you know, how they should be more ambitious, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, there's some dialogue. I mean,
we're expecting some kind of back and forth from
definitely. Yeah, we've spoken quite a lot of times with the EU Agricultural Commissioner Janusz Wojciechowski, and he's always really emphasized this idea of dialogue between the Commission and member states. Yeah.
I was also impressed by during this hearing at the Agriculture Committee at the European Parliament. The Commission official who was speaking, at a certain point, he used the wording negotiations in the negotiations with the member states, which is a strong word. As you said, Wojciechowski so far has always preferred milder wording like dialogue, no? But in this case, he talked about negotiations. So they expect to negotiate, no? And it means that the flow is mutual, like I give you something to get something back in return, no? Which reminds a bit the European semester, so the role of the Commission in dealing with the basically the growth in certain member states and the economic aspects. So I expect that this back and forth could be quite impactful, let's say, or could even lead to to some changes in the strategic plans.
Yep, I think it's going to be an interesting process to follow and see how. I mean, this is the question on everyone's lips. You know, how can the Commission actually? How much weight does the Commission actually have to make member states, to encourage member states to adopt ambitious green goals, you know, to comply with, to have ambitious eco schemes, things like that.
Why is important the timing of approval of these strategic plans?
Well, so the Common Agricultural Policy, the reform enters into force on the 1st of January 2023. But of course, farmers have to have a little bit of heads up, you know, have to know what's going on. They have to plan ahead. You know, it doesn't just work that one day you're just like, I'm going to plant this because yesterday I got told this. You know, this has to be a whole process. So EU farmers have always said they wanted some certainty on this, you know, by early summer, really at the latest, to give them, you know, all the way until the end of the year to be planning and understand, and also interpreting and understanding these plans and what they mean and how they can get funding for different things. Because this is a novel, as I said, this is the first time that they've done these plans.
So farmers want this before summer, but I'm sensing
ideally.
But
there's a big but coming, as always. Well, the big but is that the Commission official that was speaking in the Com Agri meeting that we referenced a little bit earlier, was basically saying that he, you know, realistically speaking, he doesn't see the possibility that a CAP strategic plan will be adopted before summer. And actually, he thinks that the first plan will be adopted. He thinks September is a much more realistic timeline.
Which is autumn to him.
Which is also what?
It's autumn. It's not
autumn. Yeah. No, it's not. Well, it's a bit borderline September, I suppose. Yeah, some could argue slightly summer, but we're definitely in autumn territory, in my view. Also because, you know, we're talking about the first plan being approved in September.
Indeed. So
there's obviously 28 plans, 27 countries, 28 plans. And, you know, some of them are late already, so they're obviously already behind. Others might be more complicated. I know the Commission official also said that one of the weightiest plans weighs in at like 4,000 pages. 4,000 pages.
That's impressive.
So the Commission has to go through 4,000 pages and then give their, you know, their observations. Obviously, any modification or negotiation, as we were talking about, on a 4,000-page document is going to be a very lengthy process.
There are some critics about this, you know, that consider this This is a way to rely on a huge length of the of the plans in order to flood the commission with information and water down any possible amendments or suggestion coming from the commission.
Yeah.
Which is a tactics quite used at the European level, so it's not new.
I asked the commission official about this actually on the sidelines of the ComAgri meeting. I was saying, you know, did you think it was a mistake that you didn't put a limit on a limit length on these plans? And he was saying, you know, they've in their experience in the past, they've tried to do things like limit the number of characters you can upload the document. So, but it's never really worked. And he was saying, you know, there's this difference between need to know and nice to know basis. And he said that has to be for the member states to say. And some of them have really specific circumstances. Like the 4,000 page document one is a country that has a lot of regions and a lot of different regional plans that kind of have to be merged together. So it's obviously quite
particular. So we're talking about Spain, basically.
But I think that was the insinuation, he also mentioned like Italy as well.
It's either Italy or Spain, because they have a system. This is also relevant in general when it comes to the common agricultural policy, because there are some competences at the regional level on the disbursement, but even on the how the money is devoted. Mm. Italy and Spain always had some, not difficulties, but you know, something different in in terms of how the competences are distributed from the national level to the regional level.
I have to say the commission official didn't seem too fazed by the 4,000 word document. He was like, yeah, we do this all the time. This is what we're used to. We're used to this. You know, we can, this is not a problem. But he did point
because they do the same with their communication. Not enjoy. Never seen a commission communication.
Never seen a 4,000 page.
Yeah,
no.
Not
so and much. It's not something to aim for, FYI.
It's true. If you put together all the recommendations, like to 27 member states, it's true that they probably have in the order of 1,000 long communication, no? Like, for instance, again, the communication to in the European semester, not the back and forth during the negotiation with the member states. Mm. And, normally the work of the commission is normal in terms of length.
Mm. But definitely the length of this does cause a problem he was basically saying, you know, observation letters are likely to be sent. Although I actually thought it was quite interesting because we've heard March a lot, and he's actually saying now end of March plus into April the observation letters will be sent. I guess because some of them are late, etc. And then he was like member states will likely take about 2 months to respond, so then we're into what, June, July, and then he was saying it's summer. They've got to go through all these plans, all these pages, so yeah, that's why he landed on September realistic date
for the first plans.
For the first plans, yeah.
Yeah, this is, this is also a consequence of the fact that there are no penalties for missing plans.
Yeah, and actually I asked about that and he was saying, no, there are absolutely no penalties foreseen for any late or missing plans. But he did say the main punishment, basically that, you know, it's going to come back on them, that, you know, they're going to suffer the consequences of a less timely adoption of the plan on their own farming sector and on themselves. Yeah. And he basically said that's going to just backfire on them if they're late. That was the punishment, he said.
There's a very good article I'm reading right now on this national. It's a bit of a background, and you can find it on Euractiv. And it's been written by this reporter, Natasha Foot. So I strongly suggest you to go and check this on our website. While we're moving to the second topic that we want to touch on today, which is something that we already covered some weeks ago, but with a completely different angle.
I can't say we covered it. We had a good anecdote about it.
We mentioned it. We mentioned it.
About, yes.
Yeah, it was to make fun of our
ourselves.
Visible Spanish. you probably remember the mysterious Cintura Negra gate. Yeah, it was quite...
big mystery.
So we were, in a nutshell, we were at this press point with the Spanish minister, agriculture minister Luis Planas, and he was talking about this Cintura, the alleged Cintura Negra. And it turns out it was aceitunas negras, so black olives. So finally, we're going to talk seriously about this stuff. No, I mean, not seriously, but it was one of the topic discussed during the parliamentary committee meeting.
I'm always going to hear Cintura Negra every time we talk about this.
Yeah, yeah. Probably our listeners too. So it's a trade dispute started in 2017 under the Trump administration. So basically two American olive processor complained that the Spanish companies producing olives were being subsidized by the EU. So basically they were kind of dumping the black table. We're talking about the olives that are used in the American pizzas, basically. So
it's very specific.
Yeah. I mean,
well, they're specifically used for American pizzas. Well, they used for
cooking. I mean, it's mostly used because it's the, you know, they're basically in cans and they used by pizza maker in America. Both food produced, like, you know, in restaurants, but also in more processed food, you know. I mean, can you imagine the market pool of American pizzas that got olives on their top, no? So it's a big market. And there was an investigation by the U.S. Commerce Department, which led in 2018 into anti-dumping duties and basically anti-subsidized duties. That were basically the EU, of course, opposed these tariffs as illegitimate, and this reduced the export of almost 60% for the black olives sector compared to the pre-duty state of play. Basically, the export fell dramatically from 67 million euros a year to only 20 million. So the Commission took the US to the WTO panel, which basically in November decided on the case, basically backing the US, the EU's claims, and confirming basically their stance. And yes, why it's important this situation with black olives, apart from the fun from our bad Spanish, it's what the commission official who were speaking before the MEPs said. So it's not just about Spain, and it's not just about olives. This is about how the CAP is perceived outside Europe, and how the fact that some sectors are subsidized under the Common Agricultural Policy shouldn't be considered as subsidized, because it's not sector specific, you know. So it's basically about the fact that the CAP, the CAP, is WTO compliant, which is something quite known in the trade sector, but maybe not that known for the Trump administration. But it was also in a completely different environment for the relationship between the US and the EU. You know? So it was there was a trade war. I mean, trade war.
Well, it was a different time.
Yeah. So
it's definitely made up a little, come some way to making up.
Indeed. And how this will end? So basically, the US committed to remove the DTs last January. No, actually, this January, sorry. On the 19th of January. But they basically called for a reasonable period of time to do this because and they're in discussion with the EU in order to agree on how long this reasonable period will last. But this was a positive outcome anyway, because even the commitment to comply with the WTO judgment is considered as a victory by the Commission, by the Spanish Ministry, and in general, as I said, by this is something that interests all the member states. So that's why the Commission wanted to highlight this particular case as a good example of how it is important to defend EU interest when it comes to the implementation of the CAP.
This week, we're very happy to welcome back to the podcast our very own Julia. Welcome.
Hello,
Julia.
Very happy to be here.
Hello, it's always a pleasure to have you. And so we said we were moving through all the different themes of this Agri committee meeting. And true to our word, we've covered the national strategic plans, we've covered the olives, and now we're on to a new topic, which is food security, or shall I say an old topic that keeps coming up again and again in different forms.
One of the older topic in the agricultural policy in the EU.
Exactly.
The beginning of everything.
It's true, they actually pointed that out during the committee as well, how it's like one of the first objectives of the CAP when it was founded, but then kept coming back.
Indeed,
time and time again.
Been this big, well, this ongoing debate about whether it's still, you know, relevant to be talking about food security, whether it's still an issue. It's mainly, you know, kind of different perspectives, environmental perspectives versus...
It all started with the Environment Commissioner Sinkevich, who was
he did weigh in,
food security is no longer an issue in the EU during a committee meeting at the European Parliament, and it triggered a ruckus because MEPs felt
But
tell us more about the debate in the Comagri.
I think the DG Agri would definitely disagree with this verdict that food security is no longer an issue, because they have actually included it in their farm to fork strategy when they presented it. But so far, we didn't really know what specifically that would entail. And so in yesterday's Comagri, we had a commission representative present the commission's plans on how they want to safeguard food security, especially drawing on the lessons we learned from the COVID crisis, where there were quite some risks regarding food security, firstly because of runs on stores and hoarding of food, but also because of supply chains that were a bit interrupted from time to time because of all the border controls. So this is a bit the Commission's inspiration for these new measures.
Yeah, definitely threw a new light onto the food security issue with the pandemic. As it has onto so many other issues. So what were the most interesting points of this plan that the Commission outlined?
There's mostly one big innovation, as the Commission official called it, which is, I would say, basically a copy of what the HERA, so the Crisis Response Mechanism for Health, is for health. Mm. So they want to establish a transnational panel with national experts and stakeholders, which is going to be a European food security crisis preparedness and response mechanism.
Ooh, catchy
term.
The era
is there another acronym?
The acronym is EFSCM, so it's not quite as catchy as HERA.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, HERA is not that good. I mean,
HERA is better than that, whatever we just heard there. EFS, blah, blah, blah.
At least HERA is a word.
HERA is terrible, guys, honestly. They wanted to do something kind of similar to the BARDA, which is the US agency that do the same stuff. But they come up with Hera, which is, I don't know.
I like Hera. I'm just going to put it out
It's also
there.
That the, you don't have the, you know, the flavor of the things that they're dealing with. No, because I mean, DigiSante is something, okay, Sante in French is health, yeah. And they're dealing with health. Like this, I mean, similarly, DigiAgri is DigiAgri, you know. DigiComp is DigiCompetition. Yeah. But Hera, sure. Okay, sorry. You go ahead. That was...
this catchy new group called EFSCM is for to bring together experts and stakeholders from all the different member states, but also from along the supply chain, because the commission officials stressed how food security doesn't only rely on production, but also on the steps that come before it and after it in the supply chain. So we're also talking about the inputs that go into food production, such as fertilizers. And we're also talking about the steps that come afterwards, so transport, retail, and all of that. So this group is supposed to bring together all these dispersed actors, which is also kind of a lesson from the pandemic, and several MEPs pointed that out too, that this was a big issue during like the first wave of COVID. Everyone was kind of had to be involved in safeguarding food production, but it's a very dispersed network of actors and it was kind of difficult to bring everyone together to communicate. So it's supposed to be basically a platform for communication between all these different parts of the supply chain.
So it's more to enhance the cooperation, but yeah, the coordination, no?
Yeah, I think it's a platform for member states to exchange more than an actual grab for more EU competences.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this was also during the COVID pandemic, one of the pride of the sector was the fact that compared to other sectors, they proved to be resilient, or at least more resilient. So maybe they wanted to put forward something that is not that dramatic, like, again, the Hera. But something that could help sharing best practices, maybe. But still, again, they still wanted to address any potential issue when it comes to food security, also to keep it high in the agenda or in the agriculture discourse in Brussels. Otherwise, it's all, you know, all the focus would be moved to sustainability.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because some of the other aspects that were also pointed out by the commission, also the MEPs, other than kind of the climate impact of food security or on food security and the lessons from COVID, they also talked about cybersecurity and geostrategic concerns. So actually, the commission official pointed out that for example, fertilizers, you often need gas to produce them. And obviously, that's a big hot topic at the moment with prices rising, but also geopolitical risks around Russia. And Russia, as well as China, are actually also some of the main places that the EU gets phosphates from. So this is another input into agricultural production where the EU isn't self-sufficient. So these are also risk factors.
So actually, our top story this week is very timely to tie into this discussion.
Mm-hmm. No, but as you say, just to make an example, fertilizer, no? Belarus is one of the main producers of fertilizer, actually one of the components of fertilizer. And this is a clear example of something happening at the geopolitical level, tension with Belarus, embargoes, and how this could have repercussion on the agri-food production in Europe, no?
Definitely.
So today we're talking about another weird acronym in the EU, SAIO.
One of many.
S-A-I-O or SAIO. It sounds a bit like the singer Ne-Yo. Yeah.
SIO is better than the EFC, whatever Yulia just spoke about.
Yeah. So SIO means statistics on agriculture input and output. We know that in agriculture, statistics are key, for instance, to check the compliance with the new sustainability requirements, for instance. But not only for evaluation, but also to design agricultural policies. So statistics are quite important also when it comes to the farm to fork and the biodiversity strategies, also because it's mostly about targets, no? Like the reduction of pesticides and so on. So the commission wants to overhaul the current system on how to collect the aggregated data on agriculture inputs, like animal feed or pesticides, and outputs as well. So the animal production, prices. So all these statistics are collected on farms, but also by intermediaries, market organizations, and so on. So the proposal was presented last year on the 2nd of February, and the trilogue started on the 3rd of February, 1 year after, 2022. So we have here today with us to speak about the trilogue, the leftist Greek MEPs, MEP Petros Kokkalis. Thank you, Petros, for having accepted our invitation to speak today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So it's not the first time we invite a lawmaker to speak about a trilogue negotiation here at the AgriFood podcast. We had MEPs, we had the commissioners, and even a minister once. But I can tell you it's the first time that we're hosting someone who's just come out from a trilogue because the kickoff meeting ended like half an hour ago. So Pedro, I'd like to ask you, what are your first thoughts after this meeting and how was the atmosphere in the room?
Well, I'm sure that you have done this before and you know that I'm under certain obligations regarding confidentiality of the discussion. And so I will try to be as open as possible. So my first impressions from the first trilogue were quite positive. All parties, the Commission and the Council, seem very much eager and keen to conclude this file. And let's say that there is a broad agreement on what needs to get done. This is a file that is, of course, very technical. It's about statistics and for us, it's very important that we go forward with a reorganization, a harmonization, and a restructuring of the regulation that governs the collection of statistical data from agriculture in a way that allows policymakers and everybody involved to monitor properly the implementation of the extremely important and urgent reforms that happened in the Common Agricultural Policy, but also in the European Green Deal, and more specifically in the farm to fork strategy, the biodiversity strategy, and of course the action plan on organic. So we need a better, let's say, statistical support for evidence-based policy going forward. And my impressions from the room was that everybody was engaged and happy to move forward.
And perhaps, would you be able to outline maybe the main points of the Parliament's position on this file?
Yes. The Parliament mandate, which is quite strong in terms of the agreement we have with the other shadow rapporteurs, and it's been a very nice experience that all the shadows that are on board are very engaged and we are working very closely. We worked for a long time to arrive at a compromise, and now we stand firmly behind it. And what we want to see is beyond the harmonization, we have, let's say, two main points. The first point is to make it fit for the Green Deal so that we include the collection of statistics on pesticides, on veterinary medical products and antimicrobials. And also we want to make sure that there is increased transparency along all informed, all relevant authorities on this data.
And of course, Petros, considering what you're allowed to say, but what are your expectations? But also, if you think that there are points where the council seem a bit far from the parliament position at the moment?
Let me say this. This is a very peculiar file in many ways. It is, it is. I don't want to call it a backdoor or something like that. But on the one hand, we have the Commission is represented by the by Eurostat. Mm. So it's not DG Agri or DG Santé or the cabinet of Mr. Timmermans. That's the head, the point here. It's Eurostat. And on the other hand, we have a file which is still at the CSA, the Special Council on Agriculture, Special Committee on Agriculture, and not on a ministerial level. So it's seen as a technical file. But at least on my part, I think that data is extremely important in our effort to go forward in a transition that has to be very fast and very efficient and very radical, if I may, being a leftist.
And I just wanted to ask you, there were some controversies about the inclusion of data collection in the organic sector specifically. And I was just wondering whether the theme of organic came up in today's meeting, whether you were able to give us any more details about what was discussed on organic and whether it should be included.
Organic is part of the mandate of the European Parliament. So I'm happy to discuss that we want to see clarity and visibility of organic on data on organic production and also output on prices, which reflects market condition. And there was a broad agreement on all parts, the Council and the Commission, that that's what we're aiming for. Now we are working on the technical details on how exactly we're going to do it in a way that is best for both the end users of the information, of the data, and also it's cost-effective in terms of collecting. So I don't see a problem in the organic action. This is a part where we need to be creative. In general, as we, I think it's important to realize that as we move forward towards a new organization of our economy in the general sense, but more specifically in agriculture, we will need to find, to be creative and find new ways. So yes, we will need more data. Yes, it will have a cost to the national authorities. We have made provisions for increased financial support for national authorities. And it is clear that both in the agriculture and in general in the Green Deal, we will need more data and more regulation.
And just one last question about the need for more data. At the same time, some have pointed the risks of increasing the, not administrative burden, but again, the burden of collecting this data on farmers. What's your take on this? Do you think that this kind of risk exists?
Well, I'm not very much in favor of the administrative burden. I am a reasonable rapporteur. I stand for the parliament here. There are colleagues, shadow rapporteurs, that have this very high in their agenda. But I think that in this day and age, in the second decade of the 21st century, and with the ubiquity of digital equipment and data collection points, which are practically in the pockets of every farmer. I mean, you know, I'm sure that most farmers have both Facebook and WhatsApp accounts. And we need to be creative here. I think we need more data. And that doesn't mean we have to increase administrative burden. We do need in general in the Green Deal, and increased participation and increased intervention of the state in investing and in regulating the market. That's our position as a political group, but I think it's clear to everybody that this transition will need to, and as also the pandemic showed us, that we need a better for sure and perhaps a little bit bigger state intervention. And in this sense, we're doing our best also in the SIO to keep it lean and mean.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Petros, for your time today after what I'm sure was quite a grueling day for you. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too.
So that's all from us today. And this week, like every week, the Euractiv Agri-Food podcast was put together by Euractiv's Agri-Food news team. That's Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foote, with the technical support of our podcast producer, Evi Chiori. And you can also find this podcast on all major streaming platforms. So that includes Amazon, Apple, Spotify and Stitcher.
And be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agriculture news in the EU from the Euractiv Agri-Food team. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening and see you next week.